No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. We're recording a day later than typical on a Wednesday night. And we are dead in the middle of, maybe by the time you hear it, the free agency will have begun. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today sports media group, NFL wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how's it going? Is we are furiously typing our fingers off with you know, all sorts of Cardinals news, and most of it is departures, as we're going to be talking about tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a sad in memoriam type show for at least one player who I said last week is the type that you would have loved to have seen retire as an Arizona Cardinal. You know, but we talked about this last week and 2 weeks ago. This is what was expected with the salary cap situation the Cardinals are in. You know, they decided last year to give Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald contract extensions to give themselves some cap relief. And, you know, they may be looking back on that and saying, eh, but it was at the point where, and I maintain this, there's no other option out there that in 2017 helps the Arizona Cardinals as much as Carson Palmer. So you live with his $24 million a year contract, and you just kind of move forward. And, you know, you and I have talked about this off the air quite a bit. The most intriguing part of this entire thing is, what the hell are the Arizona Cardinals in 2017? Are they a contender? Are they in a sort of rebranding of an organization? You know, where are they on this kind of journey under Steve Keim? I think that's going to be the most interesting aspect of what happens in 2017.
And, you know, NFL, the legal tampering period began on Tuesday afternoon. Usually by this time, there is a whole bunch of names out there connected to the Arizona Cardinals. I know the last couple of years we've had all sorts of names, but then again, this offseason the Cardinals have much less salary cap space than many other teams, and a lot of the focus has been on their own free agents they were set to lose. There's a couple of things that we were going to talk about. Basically, the show this week will be dealing with some of the Cardinals free agents, because they've made a couple of announcements. They've got an announcement that is yet to come that's been reported, and a couple of players who are headed out the door. So we'll be talking free agency, at least in that sense. No signings or anything else happening really around the league yet, because free agency does not begin until Thursday afternoon. Now, granted, by the time you're listening to this show, free agency will have indeed already begun. So we're not going to focus so much on free agency except for the Cardinals things that are happening right now, and we will react more to that in our next episode. But with the NFL Combine wrapping up, you know, Seth, in fact, on his most recent podcast for the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast with his co-host Justin Higdon, they recapped the combine, the winners, the losers, and so there's plenty to talk about, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Or, well, I'll let Seth do a little bit more of the heavy lifting on the draft stuff. So that's what's coming up. This is our 151st episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, previously known by another name. But since you've been listening, if you've been listening since the beginning back in 2013, thank you. We're talking NFL football. We're talking Arizona Cardinals, free agency, and NFL Combine. So that's what's on deck here on Rise Up Sea Red. this episode, I'd like to let you know, of course, that is brought to you by our friends at BlueApron.com. I've talked about Blue Apron now for quite a while. And in fact, tonight, I just had another meal that I just prepared from Blue Apron, a delicious Moroccan lamb and beef tangine over some brown rice. It was fantastic, a dish that I myself would not have done on my own. But Blue Apron, if you haven't heard of it before, it's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, with the whole mission to make home incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They do it with fantastic, great, fresh ingredients, but also being responsible, setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs that supports a sustainable food system. In fact, if you look at the impact it's having, you know, families like my own or Seth, sitting down and prepping home-cooked meals is sometimes a task. So, you know, you'd like to add things to your menu. You'd like to get away from the takeout or going out. So this is the perfect balance if you're looking to change it up a little bit. Blue Apron will send you every ingredient that you need, the perfect amount of ingredients sent right to your home with instructions on how to do it. You takes, you know, anywhere between half hour to 50 minutes to prep and prepare and cook your food, and you've got a delicious home cooked meal that you can sit down with your family. We got upcoming meals right now at blueapron.com: salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter, a vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes, and what looks like, and the fish dishes are fantastic, spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. Is it affordable? Yes. It's less than $10 per person per meal. It delivers fantastic recipes, pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked foods. Now, for you guys, our faithful listeners of Rise Up Sea Red, check out this week's menu and get, that's right, three meals free. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/red. Again, that's blueaprons.com/red. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. Again, that's blueapron.com/red. Again, three meals for free, free shipping. Test it out. There's no risk at all. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And let's kick things off with, you know, free agency. The Cardinals have two moves that they've made. If we're looking at the Cardinals, there were four big names, that basically the four big names on their list, and basically all four have been taken care of. Jermaine Gresham, re-signed by the Cardinals to a four-year contract. Chandler Jones, previously franchise-tagged, is finalizing a five-year contract, which being reported is anywhere between, it's about between $83 and $84 million, with more than $50 million guaranteed. On the other side, the other two big names, the defensive tackle Calais Campbell and safety Tony Jefferson, both are on their way out of town. Tony Jefferson's headed to the Baltimore Ravens, according to reports. He was considering them along with the Cleveland Browns. It appears at this point, by the reports that came out on Wednesday afternoon and evening, Baltimore will be that team which he joins Eric Weddle. So that's going to be a fun safety tandem, while Calais Campbell will be joining the Jacksonville Jaguars for the second year of the row. They are adding a high-priced interior defender. He will team up with Malik Jackson to anchor the interior of that defensive line. Let's talk about, and we've got a couple of things to talk about. They made some other minor moves, like they brought back Zach Dysart because he's a quarterback of the future, of course. but let's talk about the moves for the players that they're retaining. Jermaine Gresham, four-year deal, and Chandler Jones, which will be a five-year deal. What was your reaction to the Jermaine Gresham contract?
I thought it was fair if they actually utilize him in the role that he's capable of. I actually wrote about that so on Tuesday for Revenge of the Birds. So just to kind of talk about it a little bit, they paid him as a top 12 tight end in the NFL, you know, right around top 10. And you're talking about a guy that finished in the 26th in terms of receptions, 28th in yards, and tied for 29th in touchdowns. And a lot of that was due to, in the first six games of the season, he was targeted 10 times in six games, not 10 times a game, 10 total targets in six games. He had six receptions for 59 yards. The last 10 games, he had 51 targets, so about five a game, and ended up with 31 catches for 332 yards and two touchdowns. You know, you put that out over the 16-game season, that's 50 catches, 531 yards, and just over three touchdowns. So if you get 50 over 500 and maybe five, I think he's worth it. If you get another year where, at no fault of Jermaine Gresham's, you are not, you know, utilizing him, then I don't understand the usage of the cap space for that. Again, and again, it has nothing to do with Gresham the player, but this was always my reasoning for going after OJ Howard. I think they're equal at 13 in the draft if he was there. I think they're equal. I think Howard has more upside, but I think they're equal in terms of talent. I think Howard's a better blocking tight end, and he was going to make about, you know, $7 million over his first two or three years, as opposed to $7 million a year. Yeah, it's a first round pick, but you know, you could have utilized that $7 million somewhere else on the team. But again, none of this is at the expense of Jermaine Gresham or the fact that I think it's bad to pay him. I don't know if spending $7 million on a tight end when you don't utilize the tight end, it is the best way to do that.
At least statistically, you're definitely right. Now, in terms of value of what you get, can you find someone who, as well as Bruce Arians says he does, because if there's one thing that Jermaine Gresham does well, while he may not be the best blocking tight end, he's definitely ferocious and really buys into that notion. So there's really no, he doesn't half butt his way through blocking like you'll see some, you know, some tight ends do from time to time. But to get the balance of what he can do in the running game and the potential production in the passing game, he has physical tools that you know, because he was a first rounder, and in a way, I thought, you know, OJ Howard was kind of like a Jermaine Gresham. He's kind of like a Jermaine Gresham when he came out of Oklahoma, super productive. And in fact, if you look at Gresham's first several seasons, he was a 50 to 60 reception guy when he was with Cincinnati. I mean, 2015 for the Cardinals, he was barely had any stats, but Carson Palmer came out and said after the season that he was really important for the team, and he did well, even though the first half of the season he was not a part of the game plan at all because he was coming off the back surgery. He missed most of camp, and you know, he was still learning. So basically, was go out there and block, and you know, maybe if we see you open sometime, we'll throw you the ball. And it became critical for another reason, and that was the status of their tight end room. That tight end room had nobody. You've got Darren Fells, a restricted free agent, who's, you know,
31.
4 years older. He's 3 years older than Gresham, but it basically feels like he's still barely an NFL player.
Well, and that's
and he's got potential.
But that's, I think, also we saw his plays. I mean, he does.
Yeah, I think he saw his ceiling in 2015. I think his ceiling is what he did in 2015.
Yeah.
And then you've got Troy Nicholas, who can't finish a season to save his life. You know, has potential, the physical tools, but his body just doesn't let him play. Ifeanyi Moma, again, another guy who can produce on special teams, creates mismatches. But again, the last 2 years, he's ended up on injured reserve. And the kid named Hakeem Ballas, you know, no one's going to get excited about him. I mean, he could develop into something, you know, serviceable in terms of the position, but you know, they were stuck in a situation where, one, they needed his leadership, they needed his experience, and they needed his production. And if you look at salaries around the league, much you know, much lesser tight ends are going to be getting that money. And because of his, because he's got a much higher ceiling, we might not see his ceiling because of production. I still think it, I think it's valuable to have in terms of cap usage. They really didn't have much other choice, because even if you draft like an OJ Howard, would you get the same, because he'll be inexperienced in the offense, I think you would see more mistakes than what you're going to get from Gresham. And anybody else that you brought in as a veteran, you're still going to take a step back in some ways. And so I applaud the move. It's not, I'm not going to get jump up and down for it, but I think he is kind of critical to their offense, especially as they have uncertainty at the receiver position.
Right. You wanted some consistency. And like I said, I'm not upset about the move. It's such a weird utilization of assets to pay him $7 million a year when you just don't utilize the position enough. That's why I said, if you were going to pay that much, but I guess it sounds like Martellus Bennett's going to get $9 million a year. So, I mean,
the money is crazy right now. That's one, the one thing about, you know, you get excited when you see free agency coming up and you see this, the salary cap jump the way it is. But what fans and you and I, I'm sure, overlook is the fact every time that there's a significant jump in the cap, there's also an even more significant jump in the top end salaries for free agents. So you still end up with the same salary cap management issues. Only it's the numbers are just out of this world. And that's where we come up now with the next part, is that Chandler Jones, which seemed, I don't know if I was, I don't call it completely a shock that they got a long-term deal. I'm shocked they got a long-term deal before the start of free agency.
I was surprised by that as well. But after you and I just did like 30 seconds of research, it started to make sense.
Yeah, so he's reportedly getting 5 years. It looks like the numbers that are coming out are between 83 and 84 million total. 50 plus million in guarantees. We won't know exactly what that looks like. It was reported on local radio today that the estimated cap savings, he was due to make 14.5 million under this franchise tag, and every penny of that would have gone against the salary cap. Signing a new deal with the signing bonus and everything, we're estimating that it's going to save somewhere between 4 and 5 million against the cap this year. So we're looking about a $10 million cap hit approximately. So anywhere between 9.5 and 10.5 million. So they save money this year and they're going to take a hit down the line. But, you know, we were talking about this off the air. You know, this really sets the tone for what the Cardinals, what Steve Keim views. You look at where their money is being spent long-term. So they've got now Chandler Jones long-term. They have Patrick Peterson on, who has on a long-term deal, Tyrann Mathieu. You can tell, and guess what's probably going to happen probably next year or in the next year or two, it's going to be Dale Buchanan, is that they see their defense as the core, and plus David Johnson, that's going to happen. David Johnson's going to get paid next offseason because they don't want to. Or like, you know, that they're going to be looking at before his salary goes out of control. And so they're seeing this, and there's good reason. So that's a lot of money. But now you look at the comparison, there's a little bit surprising. You wrote about it and I wrote about it. That contract's less than Olivier Vernon's. And Chandler Jones is more productive. I did not expect him to make a single – I didn't expect him to take a penny less than what Vernon got last offseason.
Yeah, so you have the most productive or the third most productive pass rusher for the last 2 years behind, you know, Khalil Mack and Von Miller. So that's a not bad company. And you get him for less money than a guy like Olivier Vernon, who
He got paid after an 8.5 sack season. and then produced 7.5.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then had less. So, it's, you know, it's one of those things. So, again, I think sticker shock is the way to put it. But in the end, it's a really – if and, again, it's, it, if they if he performs. But it's a really good deal for the Cardinals and something that, honestly – like after Joel Corey of CBS Sports said he was going to get $95 million and like 57.5 guaranteed or whatever it was, that's what I expected. And so to come in $12 million a year cheap or $12 million cheaper with less guaranteed money, like that's crazy. So,
but you look at it, if you look at it in this sense, he got less than Vernon, well, reportedly. He's more productive. And now you look at how pass rushers are getting paid. And they could sack this. If they had waited a year and Chandler Jones has another 11 sack season like he did in 2016, how much does the price tag go up in a season? So they would have had him at the $14.5 million. If they decided to franchise him again, it goes up, you know, it goes up, what, 20% above that? So you're looking at about $17 million and then trying to sign him long term. At this amount, he's getting, you know,
$16 million a year, basically.
Yeah.
16.5. And that's at a deal. Like I said, that's at a really nice deal for them. It may seem like, again, it may seem like a lot, but it's really, in the scheme of things, it's not.
And it also tells you another thing, and we were talking about this off the air, is they see him potentially as being their top pass rusher longer term. I mean, we've speculated over the last several weeks and months about, well, how are negotiations going to go when the Cardinals come in and say, so, Chandler, we talked to his agents, and you know, Marcus Golden had more sacks than you. But you look at the type of production that he got. Obviously, they see Chandler Jones as their cornerstone pass rusher, and you look at it moving forward because Golden's going to enter year three, where you could renegotiate an extension after year three. But it looks like they are poised to let him, at least right now, where they can ride the, you know, the second round contract that Golden has for two seasons and let him get paid big money elsewhere after that.
Right. And the weird thing is, and I didn't know this until literally 10 minutes before we went on the air, you know, Golden at the end of his contract is going to be 28. So he's going to be a year older than what Chandler Jones is now, and like just said,
which is after five seasons.
Yeah, which is after five seasons, correct? So, you know, like Jess said, they could theoretically sign him to a long-term deal at the same age as they just are now signing Chandler Jones at 27. So, but that will be after 3 years of, you know, of play as opposed to five. So, that's the slight difference in that, and you know, that. That does make a difference overall. And that's one of those things where you might say, well, Jones is older, but yeah, he's technically older, but he has 3 years more playing experience, is only 1 year older than Golden. So it you know, makes sense.
And you have to figure with Golden as well. You know, he's been an anomaly so far, but as the player gets older, and we saw, now granted it happened a little later, because the guy that he's been compared to, you know, James Harrison, and who was the other guy from Pittsburgh, those edge rushers that were a little undersized.
Lamar Woodley.
Yes, Lamar Woodley. Their production fell sharply. And, you know, with the type of length that Golden had, you know, that people say he would be an elite pass receiver 2 inches taller. But he's not, and he didn't have the explosive athleticism that some of the other guys that Chandler Jones showed more of, and so it's easier to bet long-term on the longer, more athletic player.
And also a guy with a, you know, a track record. Like we said, Jones in his career averages double-digit sacks. That's a unique thing in the NFL. Very few players can, you know, can say that. And he's a guy that has done it every season that he's been in the league. You know, his 2 6 sack seasons, one was his rookie year and he only played in 14 games. And then one was in 2014 and he played in 10 games. So, you know, he was on pace in 2014 for another double digit sack season. So it's one of those things where you have a guy that is consistently in the 10, you know, 11, 12 sack a year range. He's a guy that has consistently produced at a high level. And, you know, he did help this defense improve in the pass rush where they became, you know, where he and Golden were the best pass rushing duo in the NFL. That doesn't preclude them from paying Marcus Golden in a year or two. It just makes it slightly easier to, or it gives them better negotiating power because now they don't have to have Marcus Golden. They have Chandler Jones. And, you know, this year they don't have to draft anybody, but in 2018, they can start looking at rookies to replace Golden, which is, you know, as you and I have talked about and a lot of fans want to do it, that's the New England Patriot way. You pay one player a substantial amount of money at each position group and then kind of rotate guys in on rookie deals or veterans and go from there.
And, you know, the Cardinals also are seeing their other two big name free agents of their own. They are headed out of town. Tony Jefferson set to sign a deal. It appears to be all set to sign with the Baltimore Ravens. And Calais Campbell. Jaguars, actually, as we are speaking, Jason LaConfora, CBS Sports, just tweeted the kind of the what the per year average is going to be. Calais Campbell getting $14 million per season. So let's talk about Calais first. It's a very bittersweet. It's one of those things for me where I feel have very mixed feelings about the loss. One is he's going to be 31 years old. Do you really want to pay someone if it looks like it's going to be $56 million over four seasons? But then again, between you can kind of look at who they have in the defensive line room. And it's a little bit different than the tight end position because the tight end position, they have very little production or experience. The same can be said about the defensive line, except they are in a better prepared spot because you do have some potential in Robert Kendiche, Rodney Gunter, etc. But as we were talking off the air, it's different. We're going from one of the absolute best interior defenders in football to players who haven't proven anything at all.
Right. And that's the difference between last season when they allowed Bobby Massey, who was a bottom third of the NFL right tackle, to leave for an unknown rookie, versus probably, and for my money, and I know for the BR 1000, and I know for Bleacher Report or for the Pro Football Focus ratings, Calais Campbell was the best 3-4 defensive end in the NFL. So there's where your difference is you have the player in place. The hard part is how do you let the best player at his position go with a complete unknown? And then, you know, we joked about it before the show started, but man, would it not have been nice to see, you know, 2 to 3 just dominant performances from Kendiche where you're like, oh, all right, good luck, Calais. We're going to miss you, you know, but we have this young stud in the lineup as opposed to oh, Kimdiche jumped off sides, we better bench him for the rest of the season type stuff. So that's the one slight difference. I like the philosophy, though, because, again, it's very New England Patriots-esque. Like, okay, we invested in this kid. We have to let him play now. He's going to take over for our best, you know, positional player on defense outside of Patrick Peterson. And so that's what we need to do. The thing is, you know, $14 million a year. So I'm guessing it's 4 years. That's what, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. It's, otherwise, if it's 3 years, then it's, what is it? 42.
Yeah. I had been told he was going to get at least $50 million from somebody I trust. So that's when I knew, even with the Jones restructure or the signing and the alleged, you know, $4 million more in salary cap space they were going to have. That's when I knew it was bye-bye time for Calais, because the Cardinals, you know, allegedly offered him over $10 million a season.
I bet it was, they offered him the Michael Bennett deal. Bet it was 3 years at, you know, $31 million. And I wrote about this when Michael Bennett got his deal. People thought about it and said, oh, well, there's, you know, can we get Campbell for that much or less? And he said, no, absolutely. You're not going to get him for less than that, because Michael Bennett's a year older than Calais Campbell. And Calais Campbell has, with the exception of stat with sacks, and they're not very far off statistically, but the rest of the stats sheet, Calais Campbell is superior in every way, and he's younger. That was going to be a starting point. And since he hit, now basically that contract extension that Seattle did, essentially he got a bit of a, they got a bit of a hometown discount, as tends to happen on a player that's been there for a while. Of course Campbell's going to get paid, and good for him. But the way, one of the things that I see with this is you can see where the Cardinals look at their money and they look at the production. Did Calais Campbell have hit, which, and he had a very good season. In fact, superior to his previous two, where he was a pro bowler. He was a little down in tackles, but his quarterback disruptions, he had, 53 non-sack disruptions, 26 pressures, 27 hits, according to the Cardinal stat sheet, 8 sacks. That led the team in terms of pressures and hits. And then total disruptions, with you include sacks, he also led the team. That, I think you can tell by where the Cardinals made their priority, is in they believe that Calais's production in 2016 was more about what Chandler Jones brought to the table and less about Calais Campbell himself. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Calais Campbell, but if you look at the previous year when they didn't have the threat on the edge, and he had a very up and down year. Statistically, he looked good. But there wasn't a game this past season where Bruce Arians talked about Campbell disappearing. And at this age, you can see improvement. So this is where they see it. Okay, you bring back Chandler Jones, you bring that what's potentially an elite edge rush, and you can fill in the interior with athletic younger guys with potential and get the same production. Robert Kimdiche, even though he hasn't shown it yet, Rodney Gunter shown flashes. And then the kid, Pierre Olsen, Olsen Pierre, who they protected and kept inactive all season. I think they like what he can do rotationally. You got Josh Morrow and Xavier Williams. So you've got a bunch of young guys with athleticism and potential. And I bet they see, if we have this edge rush, that they're going to make plays simply because of that, and we can replace that production. Now, leadership's a different story. Leadership's a different story, and that's something to discuss another time, depending on what happens in free agency. But I think they see, okay, we have Jones. While we'd love to have Calais back, I think we can get the same sort of production elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's what you have to hope. And it's, like I said, it's very, I like the philosophy. It's just hard to, it's a hard pill to swallow right now, you know, when you look at it, because it's hard to see your best players leaving after a season where they went 7-8-1, you go, ugh, could this really get worse? So.
Yeah, and then that leads us to the other guy, Tony Jefferson, heading to Baltimore. Supposedly, I don't have specifically the numbers, but I believe it's going to expected to be around $8 million per season. So it's probably looking, I would imagine it's probably 5 years, $40 million, right around there. They threw a lot of money at him, and shoo, you know. Tony Jefferson, interesting player, very productive last season, had a great year. And I hope he continues to grow and develop. But at that much money, I don't think there was any way you could pay him that, especially when you've got a Tyrann Mathieu and a Patrick Peterson with the amount of money they're making. It just didn't make any sense at all. And in terms of production, the Cardinals were able to get the same sort of impact from the position when Jefferson went out and DJ Swearinger came in. We've seen Jeremiah Bell put up big numbers. We've seen Rashad Johnson put up big numbers. It's a position where, and it's a position where Steve Kimes didn't mention as one of the one that's hard to find. You can find safeties who produce. Now, are they going to be as effective against the run or in the box as Tony Jefferson? No, but if you do better in the other positions, you're fine.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good safety prospects in this class that I think they feel like they can get a chance at, as opposed to the defensive line prospects in this class. So overall, the choice made sense. If it's 4 and 32, that's crazy. He's a nice player, so it's not a bad thing.
And we'll say this again and again. Hallelujah, amen to players getting paid. We will never begrudge a player going and getting what he can get in the market, because remember this: these NFL owners, these teams are making so much more money than these players will. And so every single time, as much as, you know, as a part of the fan in you, you want to say everyone to stay around, go get the money. Earl Watford tweeted this. It was a really funny tweet about the news of the rumors of Tony Jefferson. And he tweets and he whispers, go get paid, Tony. And then in the very next tweet, is it, all of us wrong. We all want rings, all of us, but go get paid.
Oh, absolutely. Always go get paid. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. You go get money and you just hope that you win as well. And they've been around long enough. He's been around long enough. He's been competitive long enough, but he's always also been on really bad teams. So, you know, it's one of those things where you just look at it and it's probably the unfortunate reality, but it is what it is. And, I don't know. Like, Baltimore's a good organization and all, but is it that much closer than Arizona? Like, is their future that much brighter? I guess it wasn't the Browns at $10 million a year, like was being reported. So I guess that's right.
But I mean, the Cardinal and John Gambadora reported on Arizona Sports on Wednesday that Tony wasn't ruling out a return to Arizona, that his heart was there in Arizona. But, you know, when the Cardinals were talking $6 million a year,
yeah,
when they're offering $6 million a year, I mean, take $500,000 less to stay in near home so you don't have to up and move anything. So you incur less of those moving costs rather than, but $2 million a difference or more than $2 million a year difference, you can't turn that down. It's silly. I wouldn't do it.
Right, exactly. No, I'm 100% with you. Like, you know, there's money that is worth turning down. You know, like you said, if for the lay person, you know, a $25,000 a year job increase, if you're at, you know, $100,000 a year, okay, that's probably worth a move, as opposed to a $5,000 a year job increase that incurs a move as well. And you're like, $5,000 a year, what's the cost of living? You know, how much more, like, this is, that's what that is. You know, you might say, well, you know, I would have stayed for less money. Well, okay. Well, if your job offers you, you know, whatever 2 million is, you know, so 33% more, 33%, or a competitor offers you a, you know, 33% more than what your job is offering you, you let me know if you're going to stay or not. Because like I said, if that's $100,000 and they're going to offer you $133,000 a year, guess what you're doing? You're packing your bags and moving. So, and so that's just what happens. And like I said, the Cardinals offered $10 million a year to Calais. He got 14. They offered $6 million a year to Tony Jefferson. He got 8. The Cardinals didn't have $22 million to spend. They just didn't. It wasn't in the cards, no pun intended, for them to be back.
And so what we have coming up is, well, by the time you hear the show, like I mentioned before, is things will be rolling. We don't know what else is happening other than, well, the Cardinals have, you know, it brought back some. And there's two things we don't know yet. One, we don't know who else the Cardinals have interest in. That's the one thing that's been really quiet. We do know.
Too quiet.
Yeah, but Zach Dysart's coming back. So is John Wetzel, as is Gabe Martin. So we've got the – no need to draft a quarterback because we've got Dysart to take over for Palmer after next year, right?
That's right.
But he'll battle it out for the third spot. And honestly, I thought he'd already re-signed. Based on a comedy set he made last year when he came back, he went ahead and signed through this year, or maybe they just didn't have the paperwork done. John Wetzel, I think that was a no-brainer. I think he's your Earl Watford with, actually, you know, even as it stands right now, I think he showed that he could start for a bad team, like on a team that has a bad offensive line. I think he could start and be okay. I mean, and he's versatile. He played left tackle. He didn't play it badly when he was in there. So that's a valuable piece to have, especially when you look at their offensive line situation moving forward. You let him develop another year, and you know, I know this is crazy talk, but if they decide to move on from Jared Beldier after 2017 and they don't necessarily have someone sitting, maybe John Wetzel can be that guy at right tackle with DJ Humphries on the left side. But other than that, you've got really nothing going on. The biggest names are now all the way. So we've got news with Kevin Minter's going to come up at some point. There is a report out that came from Connor Hughes at NJ.com, NewJersey.com, that the Jets, who apparently are interested in all of the Cardinals defensive players, they had interest in Tony Jefferson. They reportedly have some interest in Kevin Minter. Marcus Cooper is also on their list of players that they're looking into. And you know, while the Cardinals want to have him back, Aaron said that the price tag is going up. And, you know, understandably so. We joked about it, about him being a Pro Bowl alternate. But the fact is, he is a Pro Bowl alternate, had 4 interceptions last year, and that's going to get some attention from teams. And he does, when he was playing outside corner, he was solid. When he moved inside of the slot, it wasn't nearly so, but he was definitely serviceable to decent to even good some games on the outside.
Yeah, he was, and you know, I'm not gonna cry over it. Yeah, everybody knows that. But it's one of those things where, again, it's probably better to have him on the roster than it is to not have him on the roster. So it's unfortunate, but it's one of those things where you can't have bad players on, or I shouldn't say that. You can't have average players. Bad was the wrong word. I apologize. You can't have average players on bad contracts. And so if he's going to get $5 million a year from the Jets, God bless him. Good luck.
And you know, the fun thing about the potential of Marcus Cooper leaving the free agency is this: the trade that the Cardinals made to acquire Cooper, they might potentially, it might be a wash, and with the possibility of even winning a trade, of getting more for Cooper on free agency than they have to give up for him. He cost the Cardinals next year's 7th round draft pick to the Chiefs. He performed solidly, took over as a starter in week 3. But then at the end of the season, if he walks in free agency and gets a decent enough contract, he could net the Cardinals a compensatory pick. It might be a 7th rounder. It might be as high as a 5th rounder, depending on how things work out. Nonetheless, it ended up being a no-brainer trade because, I mean, in the end, they didn't really have to. Like, a 7th rounder in 2 years ahead, that's nothing. And then they might even get that pick back.
Yeah, and that's what you kind of hope for in that, and is that a guy plays well enough in your system, he probably isn't worth the move, but you know, he's able to move forward and kind of go from there. And so that's what you, and then you're able to recoup some that pick, and that's going to be what's kind of interesting to watch moving forward here, is what do the Cardinals get for these guys that they lose? Because it's not just a straight like, oh, you lost a player, here, have a compensatory pick. There's only 32 picks.
Yeah.
And they do it based upon the loss of a player, the contract he signs elsewhere. It's a magic formula that nobody really knows. So it's the loss of the player, the contract he signs elsewhere, and then the players you sign in his place that come on the roster. So, you know, a signing like Evan Mathis that had zero impact on the Cardinals could have cost them a compensatory pick because he was a $6 million player this year or something like that.
So, yes, he was.
So that cost them a compensatory pick, getting 5, 6, 7 games out of Evan Mathis. So it'll be, you know, it's not just straight like, oh, well, we lost Calais Campbell and Tony Jefferson. There's 2 third round compensatory picks. They'll probably end up with a third round pick for Calais. They got a 5th for Bobby Massey, who signed a $6 million a year contract. Is that what it was?
Yes, it was $3 million, 3 years, $18
million. So $8 million a year. It's probably going to be a 4th rounder for Jefferson. And then it's going to be – they're not going to get anything for anyone else. They might be able to sneak a 7th rounder for Cooper or a 6th rounder for Cooper, but I think with – the number of players that they're going to have to sign, I think Cooper may get lost in the shuffle, but it is, again, it is the Patriots way, so to speak, where you sign a guy or trade for a guy for nothing, get a little something out of them in production, and then hope to get a compensatory pick that'll be potentially even higher than the 6th round pick that you gave up. Or 7th round pick, excuse me.
Right. And you know, a 7th round pick is a throwaway pick anyway. So whether you get a player this year or a player 2 years from now, it's nothing. So that'll wrap up our talk for free agency. And now we're gonna change gears a bit, and I'm gonna let Seth do a little bit more of the driving here, because this is his wheelhouse, and that's talking NFL combine, NFL draft stuff. So coming up next on Rise Up C-Red, we're talking NFL draft, the NFL scouting combine, talking about the winners and losers, and you know, players to perhaps watch over the next little while, as the NFL draft approaches. We're back on Rise Up C-Red, and we're going to talk NFL Combine. Seth has, you know, if you aren't listening to the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, be sure that you do so, because they go much more in depth, as that's all they talk about is NFL Draft and NFL Combine and all that stuff. So you can get his last 2-3 episodes have been about that, previewing it, the prop bets, reviewing it, apparently both you and Justin had to eat some crow on Myles Garrett. Is that not correct?
Yeah, Myles Garrett tested out better than was expected. There were about out of the 300 or the, you know, I think it's 200 and some odd players that go to these things. There were, you know, a couple that ended up testing really, really well and better than their high school's combine testing that happened. And so that was, you know, those were the anomalies. That's something that we've been waiting to see, kind of how that worked out. And so it did work out quite well. And now I think it was like 92% stayed within their, you know, within a 0.1 differential of their high school time. So there was really negligible change. And so the ones that were the outliers were guys like Myles Garrett, who ran well, didn't run as well as everybody expected him to, but still ran well and jumped well. Zay Jones really changed his numbers a lot. And then a couple other guys that did well. Carl Lawson timed well. You know, so those guys all improved, but pretty much everybody else we could predict, guys that were going to disappoint, guys that were going to do well. You know, everybody was raving about Kevin King, the defensive back from Washington. And if you listen to our show last Thursday, I believe it was, it may have even been Wednesday, you know, last Wednesday, and we posted it on Thursday, we talked about how Kevin King was going to absolutely blow up the combine. We did not have any information on another guy that really did well at the combine, Obi Melifonwu from Connecticut. We just didn't have any testing information, but it was one of those moments where you're like, wow, see, this there is some useful information from these high school numbers, and we're getting more and more of it. So it's going to be fun to watch. You know, when you look at the combine, you look at certain things, and you want to see if a player's athletic ability shows up based on what you've seen on the tape. And Justin and I are not big watch the tape guys. Like, it's important. It's a piece of the puzzle. It's a big piece of the puzzle, but there are still things you can delineate from these times as opposed to just flat out watching tape. For instance, you know, something we've talked about quite a bit is Marcus Golden. He's an outlier. He's a different type of guy with the times he ran and then his odd shape, short arms, kind of barrel chested, stocky. So he's a guy that you really have to have a good feeling on to draft highly. And the Cardinals, you know, let's be honest, they didn't even take him highly because a second round pass rusher isn't really
it's a throwaway pick almost, because you're just what is it after the first 15 picks in the first round when it comes to pass rushing? It's really kind of the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to find guys, and it's hard to find players that, you know, that can make an impact. And so they really, you know, if you want to say they went out on a limb on him, that's fine. But I think it was one of those picks where they were like, oh, this is, you know, this is who we want. So this is who we're going to grab. So you look at it, and the guys that tested well, the guys that really impressed, were guys where, you know, they're playing. What they do on film showed up as part of what they did in the testing. And so, for instance, a guy like Duke Riley, he's been mentioned after the Senior Bowl. He came in and he was 6 feet nothing, so that wasn't surprising. But he weighed in at 232, which I thought was big for him, and not big as in too big, but you know, one of those guys that you wanted to see weigh a little bit more, carry a little bit more weight on him, because he is only 6 feet tall. He ran a 4.58, but more importantly, he destroyed the short area drills. 6.89, 3 cone, and a 4.21 shuttle. These numbers are, you know, show what type of quick area, change of direction, and explosiveness a player has, and that was Duke Riley. In spades. So at 6 feet, 232, all of a sudden you're like, okay, I this is a guy I can get at, in the second or third round that really would fit with what we want to do defensively, an athletic guy that can move. And then you look at a guy that's even bigger than him, not much, but a little taller, a little longer, a little heavier at Raekwon McMillan. He ran a 4.640. That surprised a lot of people. Again, if you listen to Justin, if you read his articles, you would have known that that was something that he had in him, because that's what he tested extremely well as a high schooler. Not as fluid laterally as Duke Riley, but again, a guy that if you can get him at 45, you know, because linebacker is going to be a need for the Cardinals, then I think you're very excited about that. The other guy that really has just exploded, and you wrote about him and his potential at 13 even, and that's Hassan Reddick out of Temple. Again, explosive athlete, 4.5, 240. He's right in the middle of both guys at 6'1", 237. So he's not a you know, he's not a big guy. He's not a bruiser by any means, but he's a guy that has really nice explosive capabilities. And
he's also got some more size, because if you pair him up with someone like a Dale Buchanan, who's not going to be more than 215 to 220 pounds ever, you add another 15 to 20 pounds of bulk on him, but still get the same
athletic ability. Yeah.
The athletic ability, you have someone who can hold up on them blocks and be able to be that hammer in the defense to free up a Buchanan or someone else to make plays, a la Carlos Dansby, because he had the athletic ability and he had the size, which was really good to see. But you know, more and more we're seeing the linebackers being smaller. You don't see as many 245 to 250 pounders in the middle of the field anymore. It's too fast a game now.
It is. And so if you're looking for something more like that, you know, a guy like Zach Cunningham didn't blow away everybody. He's 6'3", 235, but he tested well. He had good jumps, timed well in his three cone and shuttle, the same as Reddick, actually slightly faster than Reddick in the 20 yard shuttle. You know, not as straight line fast, but he did a nice job. And so he's a guy that maybe you can get him, you know, he's one of those vaunted trade back type guys. But he's a guy that, as Jess just talked about, has that length. You know, his arms are 2 inches longer than Reddick's. He's 2 inches taller than Reddick. So he's a guy that, and so he probably has another 15 to 20 pounds he can put on over his career. The other guy that is interesting, I don't know where exactly he plays in the NFL, but I've seen a lot of people that really like TJ Watt out of Wisconsin. I've heard people say he is a guy that can play kind of outside backer. He can move to kind of, he's white, so people are going to laugh at this, but, you know, kind of in the Clay Matthews role, he can do a lot of different things. And he was super explosive in the short area quickness drills, really performed really, really, really well. I mean, I can't put enough really in front of that in terms of the short area quickness drills. So that's a guy to watch because I don't know where you play him, but he's a guy that you don't want to pass on because you're afraid of where you're going to play him at.
Right, because he's a little lean for the edge. Can he play in space?
I mean, he moves like he can. So
yeah,
the question
has he done it
right, and can he transition to that, and can he do it, you know, consistently as opposed to every once in a while? Those are legitimate questions you have with a guy like him. At linebacker. So that's, you know, that's one of the things. Another, you know, positional group that we've talked about quite a bit, but the Cardinals need safeties now. Obviously Tony Jefferson's gone. The rumors are DJ Swearinger is going to be gone. I talked about Obi Milifonwu. I think people are going to start putting him into the first round. Just some tweets that I saw, and in full disclosure, I have not watched a second of UConn football because I am, you know, busy and I don't make time to watch UConn football. No offense to all you UConn Huskies football fans out there, but you know, he's a big dude. He's 6'4", 225 pounds, but he ran a 4.4 flat 40. He had a huge vertical and broad jump. Kind of the athletic freak of the combine when you think about the fact that he's 6'4", 224. So he's closer to linebacker size than he is safety size. He's going to draw comparisons to Cam Chancellor, George Iloka, all these big athletic, you know, downhill players. I don't know if he is as physical as they are. He's a guy that you wish played to that athletic ability more often than what he did. So if he was there at 45, I would be 100% on board with that. But at 13, I'm just kind of eh. The guy that I love, and I don't know, I know you're a big ASU fan, but I don't know how much you paid attention to Utah when they played here, but Marcus Williams, their safety, is he tested out again extremely well, and he is a big, rangy, free safety in a true kind of center field safety that people really are looking for in the NFL. He's 6'1" and over 200 pounds. He's not, you know, he's not a power player by any means. He's much more of a finesse player, but he does do a good job tackling. Even though, you know, he's not, again, an overly physical tackler, he'll still be able to get people down. He's fantastic in coverage. He's had 10 interceptions over the last two seasons. And he is a willing athlete to come down into the box. He's not a guy that, you know, is afraid of contact. It's just not his game, if that makes, you know, sense. I know a lot of people really like Buda Baker out of Washington. I like Buda Baker. I just don't know if you can have another smaller safety in the back end yet.
When you've already got Tyrann Mathieu in the
right, 5'10" and 195 pounds, short arms. I just don't know if he fits with what they're trying to do. The rest of the safeties kind of disappointed or didn't test. Jamal Adams, he may be there at 13. He wasn't terrible by any means, but he tested, really average. Not bad, but average. He wasn't nearly as athletic as Marcus Williams. He is a guy, though, I still think that if if you really want a safety that can play two ways, that can play in coverage but also come down in the box and play a little bit as a physical guy, he can do that. Is he more DJ Swearinger than some of the lofty comps that we've heard? Probably, but he's still a very respected and good player. What other positions interest you?
I think what we know about with the Cardinals talking about the receiver position, running back. Obviously, we're not necessarily looking at the combine stuff, but in terms of receiver, we know what Bruce Arians likes. You've written about it multiple times. Yeah, I know it's something that I kind of refer to almost every year. Would you write it 2 years ago when you kind of did the profile for Bruce Arians receivers? Who would fit that category this year that would be third round later, that are fast enough and can do the things? Does Zay Jones fit that role?
He's probably
a little on the long, tall side, isn't he?
Yeah, he's probably a little bit taller than normal. A couple guys that are interesting, KD Cannon out of Baylor is an interesting guy. He's thin, and you always worry about Baylor wide receivers in route running because they don't really have to do it, at Baylor. So, but he's a guy that he ran a 4.41 at the combine. He's a big play guy. He makes catches down the field. He moves well in open space. A guy that I really like, but I just don't know where he fits exactly, is Curtis Samuel out of Ohio State. He is a 4.31 player. He played running back too, and he is 5'11 and 196 pounds. So he's a guy that thrives just with the ball in his hands. I think he could be a really nice fit in Arizona if they were interested at like the 45th pick. An interesting one to watch. He's a little taller than normal at 6'1 and 210 pounds, but Chris Godwin out of Penn State. He's a guy that wins off the line of scrimmage really well, and it is super impressive in that way. Two other guys that I've talked about before, they didn't necessarily have the combine many, including myself, were expecting, but Carlos Henderson tested at 4.46. His short area quickness is what was more concerning. It wasn't the times that you were really hoping for. And then I've talked about Taywan Taylor quite a bit. He tested at 4.5. He's probably going to run in the 4.4s as pro day. But he is extremely quick in short area and making people miss. He's a good one. And then you have a plethora of guys that are slightly over those norms. And I'm interested to see if he makes an adjustment on this, if he tries to find a bigger body guy. But you had a guy out of Tennessee, Josh Malone, 6'3", 210 pounds, but he ran a 4.4 flat 40. So, I mean, a guy that can fly down the field. Another one was Amara Dobro out of Michigan, kind of plagued by bad quarterback play. He is 6'2 and 215, and he ran a 4.45 40. So we're talking about big guys that just really, really move. But the thing with Dobro is that I think would interest Arians the most is, those Michigan players have to be able to block. That's one of those things that they have to be able to do. And so we saw that a lot. And that was something that we always gave credit to Michael Floyd with. So you want to watch him, going forward. Why didn't he perform better, as a guy that's big, that can run? He literally is built in time just like Michael Floyd. Why didn't he do more of that? you know, I look at Zay Jones and I think he's a guy that can play everywhere. I just don't know. I always worry about these smaller school guys that did a lot of that were a lot of volume catches guys. So that was the one thing. He doesn't play nearly as fast as he timed. I hate when people say that. I hate when I say that, but it with him, it was kind of true. Like, you're like, oh wow, he ran a 4.45. You weren't like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So that was just one of those.
You're like, wait.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
The guy, obviously, was the talk of the combine, was John Ross. I even saw now, I think this was done on a simulation on FanSpeak, but now John Ross is getting like crazy, crazy high first round talk. In fact, on the simulation I ran, he went number 2 overall. I know that's crazy, but with the speed he showed, did it put him into solid first round talk, or are those knees going to be an issue?
You know, I think he'd fit on a team like Arizona, New England, maybe like a New Orleans, teams with established quarterbacks that can help him thrive in year one, that he can get a lot out of the team and the team can get a lot out of him. I think with his knees, your concern is heavily his second contract. I don't know if you're going to get 2 contracts out of that guy. And that's always a tough sell for coaches to take early. But again, if you're a team like New England who just needs a fast weapon that can move, he makes sense. Like, I've even seen Ross to Carolina at 8 every once in a while. And trust me, it makes a ton of sense. It really does. I just don't know if the NFL is going to like his physicals enough to be like, yeah, we'll take the risk. Like, I still think people are going to be hesitant because, like you said, his knees are held together with duct tape and some rubber cement.
And then the quarterbacks, interesting that DeShone Kizer sort of now is trash, right? He's kind of garbage because he
yeah, I mean, apparently he didn't throw well at the combine. I didn't watch the combine. I go back and watch the videos of the guys I want to see work out in certain aspects and just go from there. But I never watch the quarterbacks throw because it's such a bad showcase for them because they're playing with wide receivers.
Well, Teddy Bridgewater was in the same boat, wasn't he? Didn't he throw like when he was at the combine? And
yeah, and Cam Newton threw horrible. So it's just, you know, it's one of those things. Like, I take that with, you know, all the salt in the ocean type stuff. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Like, you can't read too much into it. Like, if you're concerned about his completion percentage, I'm fine with that. That's a 100% okay thing to be concerned about. But I'm not going to be concerned about his accuracy because of the combine.
Any other players worth paying attention to in terms of the Cardinals? Oh, a guy that I find a little bit intriguing, Justin, because he's a potential. He's got some really, really good production potential in the NFL. Solomon Thomas, a guy I've seen a couple of mock drafts, not a real need for the Cardinals, but would be an intriguing fit.
I love Solomon Thomas. He's literally probably my favorite player in this draft. You know, he tested out like Preston Smith, a guy we liked a couple years ago. He's a guy that I think if Betcher is as good of a defensive coordinator and ability to utilize guys, I think that he would make a lot of sense for Arizona at 13 because he can play kind of that bigger outside linebacker role, and then you move him to interior D defensive line in their kind of, because they do run kind of that 4-2 whatever on pass rushing downs, and you put Kimdiche and Thomas and then the two outside or the two ends all in there at once, and man, good luck trying to stop that group, because that would be a lot of fun to watch. You know, all that being said, I don't know. One, I don't think he's going to be there when they pick. Two, I don't know if they can utilize him properly. And that's just the reality of it. Like, I don't know if Betcher is creative enough to use Thomas in a way that will allow him to be, get the most out of his, athletic ability. He's a guy, you know, you compare him to like a Ryan Kerrigan athletically, who's done, you know, a phenomenal job in Washington. You put him up against guys like, I've seen Aaron Donald comps. I don't think that's fair to anybody to compare Aaron Donald, but he did test similarly to Donald. I just don't think it's a fair comp to anybody, because then you start expecting things. But if you can get a Ryan Kerrigan, Preston Smith, and at the low end, you're getting a guy like, who's the guy on the Cardinals a couple years ago that Matt Shaughnessy type, where, yeah. Like, if that's your low end, a productive NFL player for a long time, yeah, that's not a sexy pick at 13, but that's a player that at least it's not a bust, right? Like, at least he's not out of the league in 3 years, like certain guards that they've picked.
Good. So, that should probably wrap it up. I imagine we've been talking here, you've listened to an hour, 10 minutes or so. We're going to have a whole bunch more come in a week from now, because we should have some actual free agent movement, not just rumors and speculation and all of that. We're gonna have real free agent news as Thursday afternoon, the league year begins. And we'll go ahead and call that a wrap for this show. We've talked free agency, Chandler Jones, Jermaine Gresham, Tony Jefferson, Calais Campbell. You know, Tony Jefferson and Calais Campbell headed out of town. Chandler Jones, a whole lot richer than he was going to be. And Jermaine Gresham also appears to be getting paid quite a bit, making up for his small contracts for the previous two. And then Seth gave us a rundown of a whole bunch of players from the NFL Combine worth paying attention to in the weeks to come. I'm Jess Roots. This is show 151 of the NFL. This is not the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. This is Rise Up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. You can find us pretty much anywhere. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Facebook, and Twitter. Likewise on our sites, RevengeOfTheBirds.com and CardsWire.com. And, of course, on Blog Talk Radio. Again, that's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. Rise up, see red, and we'll be back again another week. Talk free agency some more.